Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is a social media marketing guy. So that's where he started. And he worked in several Amazon agencies. And after seeing it all, he decided, you know, he can do a better job serving Amazon sellers. So he started his own company. And today he is the co-founder of Ad Labs, which is a semi-automatic PPC bid optimization platform. So it's all about PPC and how to manage it and how to bid right. And when he's not working, he's an outdoors guy. He likes camping, backpacking, and skiing. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Andrew Bailey. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here. That was a great introduction, I guess. I said social media marketing guy. I mean, that feels like ages ago. That was right as I was getting out of college. That was a long time ago. Since then, I've been in the Amazon space for like 5-6 years now. So that feels like a thing of the past, Nick.
you sound like you are 50, 60 years old, but in technology, 1 year is worth like 10 years in any other business, right?
Yep, moves quick. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you are all about managing bids, PPC, doing things the right way. So what we're going to talk about today, I think this is a great opportunity for our listeners to pick your brains to set things up the right way, or at least in a way that is going to be easy to see the cause and effect, so to speak, so that you can take the right action. So we're going to talk all about structuring your PPC campaigns. So those who want to do it themselves or those who already do it for a living is another perspective. So we're going to cover structure in this episode. Also, right at the end, if you like everything that you hear in this episode, but your campaigns are not set up this way, what is the right way to make changes? Because if you don't make the changes the right way, that can actually cause a lot of heartache. So that's what our discussion is about. So with that, let's jump right in. So where do we start? Let's start, since we are talking about structuring, imagine you are a brand new seller and you are setting up a PPC campaign for a parent listing with a few variations. So walk us through, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a good question and a good place to start. I'm actually going to back up even further than that before we even get to this specific example and really break down what we're even talking about here. When people say campaign structure, what do they mean? What are they talking about? Really, when it comes to campaign structure, it's just two things. One thing you're really trying to decide is how aggregated or how segmented you want your data to be. There's a conversation around aggregation versus segmentation. Okay, so people have a lot of different approaches and they all fall somewhere on this spectrum of aggregation and segmentation. So let me give you two ends of the spectrum to start. So on the immense aggregation side of things, you'll have things like catch-all campaigns. So these are basically all your products inside one ad group, inside one campaign, and all the performance data for those products is aggregated under one campaign. So that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum, which is segmentation, is you'll see people talking about using single keyword campaigns or only using exact match campaigns broken out into single product campaigns and single keyword campaigns. That's like the other end of the spectrum where you're just like hyper segmented, you know, where every single ad dollar is going. So basically the conversation around campaign structure stems from this: how aggregated or how segmented do you want your ad data to be, or do you need it to be, right? That's the starting point, right? You got to figure out what levers do you need to be able to pull? What data do you need to be able to investigate, analyze? And that's all going to kind of tie into how you go about setting up your campaigns from the beginning. If you go too far one way, you may not be able to access the settings and the tools to pull the right levers to move your account in the right direction. If you go too far the other direction, you may miss out on some of the algorithmic benefits that Amazon provides in some of these cases. So yeah, I'm excited to dig into this a little bit more and break down this a little bit further, because, you know, where do people even start, right? Like, how do I know how aggregated or segmented I want my campaigns to be? I'm just getting started setting up this account, setting up these campaigns. I don't know where to go. So throughout this episode, hopefully you'll get some tidbits to help inform and guide you on what is going to work best for you. I have some kind of like, you know, golden truths or whatever you want to call them, kind of like benchmarks or just normal strategies that I go back to, right? I have like kind of a baseline structure and framework that I start from, and then I can kind of variate off of that. So we're going to be sharing that in this episode too.
Yeah. So as you were talking, the aggregation, segmentation, which one? So it reminded me of one of the Yogi Berra sayings. He said, if you come to a fork in the road, he said, take it. So which one? So we're going to have to take the fork, but which side? What is the right direction here? Segmentation or aggregation? What's your personal choice?
My personal opinion is it depends on the account, number one. And number two, I fall somewhere in between, somewhere in the middle. I like to have enough segmentation to be able to interpret the right metrics that I need. I don't like to over segment and just be only using exact match within my account, because I'm going to be missing out on all kinds of, long tail variations, one-off sales, those little algorithmic sales, you know, get one click, one conversion. You're going to be missing out on that. If you're all exact match, you might be missing some keywords or things like that. You're not going to reach those longer tail keywords. So, and on the other end, to over aggregation, doesn't give you the control that you need to be able to manipulate budgets and things like that at an individual product level. It also just doesn't give you that that product to keyword relationship. You don't really get to investigate that too closely, because think about it. If you had one ad group with all of your products in it, this is that end of over aggregation. You don't know which product converted on which search term. You don't have that level of insight. You don't have that level of segmentation to be able to tie that product to that keyword for that cost. All of your products are going to be kind of lumped up in there. So I fall somewhere in the middle, right? Like I definitely leverage some levels of aggregation when I'm doing data analysis. But I kind of skew a little closer towards segmentation, where I have more control over different things. And, you know, a lot of this kind of depends on how advanced of an ad manager you are. Like if you just got started and you've never launched a campaign before, maybe launching single keyword campaigns and trying to manage all of that and interpret all of that isn't necessarily the best thing for you. And maybe you should start just kind of getting your feet wet a little bit. But as you become more and more advanced, you can develop systems to kind of help manage as you get more segmented and get more refined in your targeting strategy within your account. You'll find ways to manage it. And as you're more advanced, I think you kind of move closer and closer towards segmentation without going too far.
So, you know, there is a bit of a mindset adjustment too, because I'll say I'm a data guy. I like to look at numbers. I like to make my decisions based on what the numbers are telling me, but I'm not a PPC guy. Yeah. So in spirit, now I, of course, you know, you do whatever it takes as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, whatever. So at the very beginning, going way back, when I first started to dabble in PPC, the first thing that I looked to do, that I later realized, wait a minute, this is not really going to be possible, is I wanted to know how much ultimately it cost me to sell one item of each SKU. Customer acquisition costs, very simple. So I want to sell this item and And I know how much it costs me to do FBA, how much it costs in Amazon commission, how much it costs to buy. Now, if I know how much it costs to acquire one order, then at least I have a pretty good idea about what to spend, except that that's not possible, right? So you can't go looking at cost SKU by SKU because some of the campaigns don't provide that data. And frankly, life doesn't quite work that way anyway, because someone who is buying one SKU may not necessarily search that SKU, but they end up buying it, and so on and so forth. So can you give us that perspective of what is it that you are looking for? What is the big picture here in your, not necessarily setting up the campaign, but running this paid campaign? What is the right thing to monitor and therefore make your decisions?
Yeah. You know, when it comes to campaign structure specifically, I mean, you're talking a lot more about like how we set our bids initially and things like that. And kind of to bring it back to your first point about seeing SKU level data, this is directly tied into campaign structure. You definitely can have access to, you know, what it's costing you, your customer acquisition costs. You know, maybe not at the total level, but if we're talking specifically about ads, and we're running ads, we can definitely do some simple calculations to figure out what that customer acquisition cost is at an individual SKU level. So is that what you're kind of getting at? I think you can definitely do that. So I wasn't really sure what you were asking.
Yeah, about. Because this is where I'm coming from. So ultimately, now we're recording this in January 2024. So as of this moment, there are four different types of campaigns you can run, right? So you have sponsored products, and you have sponsored brand, sponsored display, and sponsored TV, right?
Yep.
So those are the four kind of campaigns. Now, sponsored brand, it's not SKU by SKU, right?
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So if I run, it's simple enough. If I go sponsored product, I know that these are the keywords I'm going to go purchase, let's say, or bid on, and they're going to drive business to these SKUs. What sponsored brand doesn't work that way. So now suddenly the SKU business goes out the window. And so that's where my confusion was at the very beginning.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when we start getting into sponsored brands, that's a whole different conversation. Now, there are some things available like the attributed purchases report where you can actually see which products were purchased from your sponsored brand ads, but you can't necessarily tie that spend to one of those direct ASINs. Now, you could kind of average it and figure out, you know, the average of sales versus the other two ASINs and just kind of figure out a rough estimate of what amount of spend went to that product, but that's not a particular product that you're advertising. That's your brand that you're advertising. That's a collection of products that you're advertising. And in those situations, I'm not necessarily as concerned about whether that sponsored brand ad contributed to a particular product sale. If that's my goal, if my goal is to drive sales on one SKU, one very specific SKU, sponsored brands is not going to be the answer. I'm going to look more towards sponsored products where I have that much more precise control. I can get that level of reporting, that SKU level reporting. I can even see same SKU level units ordered, which is very important to all this. So yeah, whenever you talk about sponsored brands, you do run into some of those issues with attributing spend and getting those kind of top level metrics. But I think in general, that's going to represent a smaller portion of your budget anyway. I'd say that, you know, roughly 80% of your ad budget should be allocated to sponsored products to begin with. And that's going to be the lion's share of your sales and the lion's share of your spend. And really what deserves the most attention and kind of where I wanted to focus this conversation was around sponsored products, because I audit accounts all the time. I see accounts. I've been in the space for a long time. I've seen a variety of different things. And there's a few things that people are still doing that I think are really creating a lot of like confusion and chaos within the space that I think we could kind of drill into real quick and just kind of share, like, what are people getting wrong when it comes to campaign structure? And I'll start with two things. The first thing is that they don't have a strategy or a method to how they're launching their campaigns. They don't have clear naming conventions. Every campaign name is kind of named slightly differently or anything. And so it gets confusing whenever you're just looking at a campaign level, like what is actually going on in this campaign, because it varies across all my different campaigns. So they have no strategy. There's no like rhyme or reason to like which campaigns are trying to do what. There's no like goals associated with some of these campaigns. And if you have that base strategy, which is what I kind of want to get to and share with everybody today, is if you have that base strategy, you always kind of have something to start with, and you have options, and you can kind of pick and choose based on the situation, which campaigns are most important for your goals. So first things first, you have to have some sort of method. You have to have a process, a system that you're going to use and replicate across your account, across your products, that is systematized, really. And then the second thing that I see a lot is people still using a lot of multi-product ad groups, or some people call them catch-all campaigns. This is one that I see a lot. Catch-all campaigns are good in a very limited context. I wouldn't say that catch-all campaigns should be your entire strategy. I kid you not, I was in an account just a few months ago, and I was looking through, and the person had 5 campaigns. They were all auto campaigns. And the first one was like, catch-all campaign 1, catch-all campaign 2, catch-all campaign top sellers, catch-all campaign holiday keywords. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, and that was their whole, like, that was it. That was all there was. And which is kind of crazy to me, just knowing the information that's out there on the internet that you're sharing through this podcast and everything like that, that people aren't kind of picking up that those catch-all campaigns cannot be your go-to strategy. Those can't be kind of your core base strategy. And in general, I kind of lean on the base approach of single product ad groups. This is kind of a starting point. And then we can kind of branch off from there. But single product ad groups are when you have a campaign, and then you have your ad group, and then just one product inside of that ad group. And so this gives you a lot of different controls, where if you had all your products in one ad group, you wouldn't be able to do certain things. So for example, if you have everything segmented at the ad group level, all your products at the ad group level, then you would be able to see how one product converts on a specific keyword, conversion rates, revenue per clicks, versus another product, how it compares on that same keyword. So this number one gives you that ability to control the specific product to keyword relationships. So maybe one product has a better conversion rate on this keyword, and this one doesn't have as good of a conversion rate. So you can bid a little bit more, be more aggressive on the one that has higher conversion rates, and bid a little bit more conservatively and not spend as much on the product that doesn't have as good of conversion rates for that keyword. When you had all your products in the same ad group, you'd basically just be bidding equivalently for both of those products on that one keyword. And so you don't have that control to really hone in and get precise. And this lack of segmentation can lead to wasted spend and that inability to see how you're actually wasting spend when it comes to the specific performance that products are producing on any given search term. So single product ad groups is really, a place to start. And there are situations where, maybe it makes sense to add more than one product to an ad group. I would say in general, though, those are only in cases when I'm dealing with ASINs and catalogs that exceed, 2,000 ASINs or more. So I have accounts that have 30,000 ASINs, and the approach and the structure that we're deploying for that campaign might look a little bit different than what I would do on an account that has 100 products, simply due to just the volume of campaigns that you would run into could be quite a bit more. If you're, going down like a single product campaign route, you can't really scale that for 30,000 ASINs. I mean, I think Amazon has a limit of 10,000 campaigns. You can obviously request to get more, but I imagine most people aren't hitting those numbers in terms of number of campaigns. But I could see a case for putting multiple products in an ad group in those large catalog scenarios.
So how do you treat the variations? So if you have, and also think about the scenario where variations have different price points. So it's not necessarily the same price and not necessarily the same spec either in terms of like it could be like I have a client, they sell floor covers. So it's an epoxy floor kit, and they have variations, and between the variations they have different colors, and also mm-hmm. they have different sizes. So it's basically two sizes, five different colors, so it's 10 variations. So obviously the one that covers a smaller square footage is cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that covers more square footage is more expensive. So when you set up the PPC campaign, you would want to put the lower priced one, but at the same time, that will then mislead, so to speak, to say, you know, this is the only size available. So how do you deal with variations where there are different price points and different attributes?
Yeah, this is a great point. Even a better case to be made there for segmenting your products at minimum and ad group level. Those products have different price points, different average order values. Therefore, we can afford to spend differently on those two different products based off of our target A costs. And so as a base, you know, having those segmented at a product or ad group level is step one. And there's a couple of reasons why. Like, let's say, you know, you mentioned you have variations that have different colors of floor mats. Let's say one of them's black and one of them's brown. What if one of them performs really good on brown car or floor mat and doesn't convert very well for a black floor mat? You'd want to be able to manipulate where you're spending and allocating more. So I could go into that brown floor mat ad group. I could increase bids on brown floor mat for that one and maybe decrease bids on the black. You know what I'm saying? So you have that control over that product to keyword relationship. And so this breakout allows that segmentation. On this same kind of vein, I think this will be kind of interesting to discuss. This is kind of stemming from a case study or a client I'm working with now. They have this product. They have two variations. One of them is a lower price point. One of them is a higher price point. For the longest time, the lowest price point product was driving a majority of the volume, right? And this was before I was managing. When I came in and started managing it, I was like, hey, we should probably represent the larger size as well. Give that option, maybe take up more page real estate, win more auctions and searches and things like that. And so we segmented it out. And over the last like 3 months, really been scaling those campaigns up. And now the larger size is selling way more than the smaller size was. And that's great for the business, right? That's a higher price point product, driving more sales. And now, you know, it's kind of transitioned to the point where the larger size is now winning a bulk of those impressions, winning the organic page placement. There's a clear case to be made, and at least just like test it, right? Like just if you have multiple variations, you want to have them set up so you can identify your winners, your top sales drivers, and be able to push on those if they generate any sort of momentum. And so, yeah, I think segmenting variations is very critical. This can be highly related to merchandising. So let's say like for your brand defense campaigns, when somebody comes in and searches your brand, what are the first four placements on that search? Those are going to be your paid sponsor product ads, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. When it comes to setting up your brand defense campaign, you can pick out, you know, which products do you want to showcase in that top of search placement, right? How are you outlining your product catalog? Do those products that show up at top of search when somebody searches for your brand make sense? Are they the right ones? By having the right campaign structure, you can actually manipulate which ones are going to be winning which placement on your branded searches. So that way you can control the merchandising of your products. You can lay out your products in a format like this product goes first. This one's kind of a complementary product that people often buy with it. Or maybe you're looking at your like market basket analysis and things like that to see that these are common products that are purchased together or like purchased when people search these terms. And I want these to show up together. So you can kind of control that representation of the brand through how you're setting up your campaigns. If you just had all of your products in one branded campaign inside one ad group, you're only ever going to win one ad placement for that ad group, right? One ad group can only ever win one placement on an individual search query. So by having them broken out into multiple ad groups, you can now win, let's say you have four products, you can now win four page placements on your branded search. So this allows you to, number one, capture more page real estate, grow your paid SOV within brand and non-brand search. I mean, you can deploy these tactics and these strategies across any tactic, really. But the structure is really what allows you to, that gives you the capability to even do those things. Like if you don't have the right structure, it all really stems from that. If you don't have the right structure, you're going to hide the ability to do certain things that you would be able to do were you to use the appropriate structure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, what I'm hearing, Andrew, is segmentation is really the way to do it. I myself like to separate things so that way you can hone in on where the real cause of the issue is. But the other thing is that I heard you mention at the beginning, if you go the other way, being the segmentation, then you may lose the advantage of some of the algorithms that Amazon offers. So let's talk about that a little bit. Because so far, really, we've made the case for segmentation. So what's the case for putting it all together, having it more compacted?
Yeah, great question. So you certainly can overdo it when it comes to segmentation. Yes, everything I've kind of been talking, alluding to is like, yeah, segmentation is good, but you can certainly overdo it. There was a guy in our Discord channel who was talking about his strategy in particular, and he said that he only uses exact match. He has everything broken out into single keyword campaigns. So this is kind of the example that we're stemming from. So this is that highly, highly, highly segmented version. So you can go too far that way, certainly. And the reason why is because if you're only utilizing exact match targeting, you are basically just saying, I only want to show up on these exact keywords, these exact product targets. You are severely limiting the reach of those. Now you could say, well, I have every single possible keyword that my product could ever need to show up on built out in single keyword campaigns. And to that, you know, I'll say good job. Like, do you, you obviously aren't super interested in like branching out and learning. But the algorithmic benefit thing you were speaking to really comes into effect in those more loose match types. So your broad and your phrase match types, your expanded product targeting, those are where you can kind of tap into a little bit of that algorithm benefit where you may be targeting a specific keyword that's relevant to your product with a broad match and show up on something that may or may not be highly related to your product. And maybe it's not something you would have thought of, basically. It's not something you would have seen in a Helium 10 keyword research or something like that. You're basically going to be missing out on those one-off sales that are provided through long tail variations of keywords, through Amazon's black box algorithm knowing that this person is going to be super interested in your product, and due to the fact that you have broad match on and you're making yourself available to a lot more possible searches and search queries, then you have that opportunity to win that placement, to win that sale. And across like an entire account, if you start to really like add that up, yeah, if you're just using exact match, then you're definitely missing out on a substantial portion of the market that you could be reaching in these longer tail queries, in these kind of one-off sale situations that are afforded to you by Amazon's algorithm and the way that it works on the back end.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can see why you would not just want to have exact match campaign, because then how can you possibly guess? You don't know how people will search.
And it's always changing, right? Like it's billions of new searches every day.
So Andrew, I'm going to throw you a curveball, so to speak.
Oh boy. All right.
As you know, Amazon often loses inventory or overcharges fees. With Arty, you can now recover up to 30% of your lost revenue at a monthly flat rate of only $99 with no commission fees for unlimited reimbursements. You can increase your bottom line. Their automated Amazon compliant process ensures hassle-free refunds. Visit www.getarty.com/legends and sign up today to get 1 month free and discover your recovery potential. Let's combine in our discussion, let's combine the data that search query performance shows with your PPC campaign structure strategy. How do you utilize it? Because there is so much information there that you can, I'm sure, get ideas from. So give us some pointers on that.
Yeah. Search query performance tool is a really nice one. Definitely a advancement that Amazon's been building out even further throughout this last year. I definitely use it a lot in to do keyword research at an individual product level. And then the second main thing that I use it for is to keep a pulse on my competitiveness in the market. So I can see what click share I'm contributing or generating from specific searches to kind of monitor where I'm dominating more, where I'm maybe underrepresented, underfunded, and that kind of informs what I'm going back to my ad account and making adjustments with. Yeah, search query performance report is good for analyzing specific product to keyword relationships and getting you kind of a bigger picture view of the market, of your competitiveness within the market. And then basically you can use that information to find pockets of areas of opportunity for you to go back into your ad account, add certain targets maybe that you had missed, or you know, experiment with changing bids on specific targets and seeing how that impacts the overall click share there or impression share that you're able to generate within that or for that product within that campaign, things like that. So I'll use that search query performance as information to then inform, you know, maybe some tactical tweaks or optimizations that I can go back in and make with that.
So, but share with us some examples. So what do you look at? And then how does that influence your campaign, you know, setting up a new campaign or modifying some of the existing ones or adding keywords, removing keywords, things like that?
Sure. Yeah. Here's a really easy example. Let's say I have a keyword in one of my campaigns and I'm like, I've been increasing the bids, kind of inching them up, trying to get visibility on that keyword. And I'm like, why am I not getting visibility? Is it because I have low search volume or is it because my bids are too low? Is this a low volume search term or are my bids too low? I can very easily just go back to search query performance report or any keyword research tool and just get a sense of, you know, what kind of volume is actually going to this keyword? Is this something that I should be trying to be competitive with? Is it affordable for me to continue to be upbidding these specific keywords, things like that? Other things, I mean, in relation to more like click-through rates and things like that, I'll use search query report for monitoring click share on specific keywords. So for example, I may switch my main image, change my main image, maybe add like some graphics and things like that there. And maybe I don't tweak anything else. Maybe I just run in a split test on that main image. And I want to see if that will help me generate more of that click share. That's one other example right there. You change your main image. You want to see how your click share changed across a variety of search terms. You can go to that report and very easily see that change over time. So that's just a couple examples of ways you can use it. I mean, there's a ton of other ways that people break into it, but yeah.
Yeah, like one of the things that also came up is search query performance ultimately gives you all the performance that you get from each keyword, where the number of searches, your share, impression share, and then click-throughs, cart ads, and purchases, right? So keyword by keyword, you're able to see that. So if you find yourself getting business out of a keyword, and you're not even bidding on that keyword in the first place, so it's then it becomes a no-brainer, right? So do you have similar kind of clever stuff? Like, for example, what I did, my recommendation was get a list of all the keywords that you are bidding on and then compare that to the list of all the search query performance keywords anything that's a mismatch between the two, if it's on search query performance, but it's not on the bidding, then add. And then equally the other way around, where you keep bidding and bidding and bidding, and then you're not getting even a click through, and then obviously, you know, this is that something wrong with the content. That's where you have to, which is what you were referring to. So can you share with us some other tactical ways to make use of the two together working?
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of laid out several of the examples in terms of how to use search query performance. The one you mentioned is good too, in terms of just doing keyword research. I would say that, like, in general, with a new campaign launch, or if I'm just starting to represent a new ASIN, that's usually a good place to start to figure out what are the initial targets that I should be incorporating within these campaigns. So it's that initial keyword research phase. And then as you start to launch those campaigns, you may see changes in the data within there that inform the optimizations back and forth. So they're deeply connected in terms of how one can inform the other. And, you know, I use them in tandem just for more analysis purposes and seeing like the impact of changes in the ad console. So like, how are these different bid changes, or these, how to, like, isolating that keyword into a single keyword campaign and being more aggressive with the budget on that one keyword impact the overall purchases on that specific keyword in search query performance report.
Okay. And as far as the campaign itself, looking at the campaign performance, what numbers are you tracking in the campaign performance in terms of making the judgment call that this is working or this is not working? And give us some ideas about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people who are running PPC campaigns, their primary KPI is their ACoS. That's the main thing most people are concerned with. That's your overarching profitability metric for your ads. So first and foremost, I'm gauging the success of my campaigns based on, am I at the targets that I have set for myself for this particular campaign? And if not, I can, you know, work towards that. But that's really, you know, a driving factor in a lot of optimizations within accounts is, are we meeting target ACoS? That's usually a first place to start. Now, how you actually arrive at what those targets should be and things like that is a whole other conversation. And, you know, different keywords could have different ACoS targets depending on, you know, how aggressive you want to be or how important that is for your ranking or how aggressive you're trying to be to steal that ranking on that particular keyword. So yeah, I think, you know, all those things are super important.
So I have another question. So when you are looking at, obviously, you know, you can go to your campaign manager and then you can see the ACoS and blah, blah. That's the total.
Sure.
But when you want to drill down, especially if you've done the segmentation in a fairly diverse way, you want to look at each one and you download your reports. So let's say that you're looking at it daily and you look at, okay, so how was, let's say you're looking at yesterday's data today. So you pull the report, you look at yesterday's data, and there you have your click cost, you have your click-through rate and impressions, blah, blah. But you are looking for the sales you generated.
Yeah, certainly trying to drive more sales within a given constraint of an ACoS target. Right. It's like, how many sales can I get within this margin or with this margin?
So this is where things start to get a little bit confusing, because when you look at yesterday's data today, and then you say, okay, how much sales that click cost generate? That is not a permanent number, is it?
No. Yeah. What I think what you're talking to is if you're looking at yesterday's data, for the next 7 days, you're going to, or I think, is it 7 days? Yeah, 7 days. You're going to have sales being attributed to those clicks that happened on that day. So to your point, never just look at one individual day of data to inform how you're analyzing your campaigns. One individual day is not enough information to inform in most cases. I mean, sometimes that's all you have, right? So a lot of times you need more than that. Generally, I would say 7 days is kind of like a minimum that I would want to look at to just kind of evaluate the aggregated performance of a campaign to see how it how like changes in throughout the full week. I'm not just looking at like an individual day. There are certainly cases where I do just need to look at an individual day in order to inform what types of changes I need to make. But yeah, to your point, you know, the yesterday's data isn't fully populated yet. Not all the sales have been attributed yet. And so therefore we should probably wait a little bit longer to see how the metrics actually settle.
So sure. I mean, it's the overall performance over a period of time that will give you a much better understanding. But that overall performance over a period of time is, at the end of the day, made up of individual days. And what I'm referring to is the sales for each individual day is also changing every day, because even though the click is registered to each day, by the end of the day, whatever clicks were generated on that day, you will see in the report, this is how many clicks this keyword got. And when you then look at the sales data for that day, it may show $100, but you pull yesterday's data 3 days from now, it may show $300, because $200 may have come in, you know, 2-3 days later. So that's my point. So when you pull the data, are you familiar with what data is the permanent value that you will see on that day that is not going to change?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a whole conversation of data confidence versus data relevance. So over a longer date range, say I'm looking at 60 to 90 days worth of data across my campaigns, I have a lot more confidence in the metrics behind those, because it's a more aggregated view. It's giving me a broader time horizon to look at. It's I can be confident in the performance that I got within that date range, because it's over a period of time. I could also get into, now the other end of the spectrum is you get into data relevance. So the most relevant data is going to be, you know, the most recent days of data. And so you kind of have to find this balance of whenever you're doing analysis, are you trying to inform optimizations going into the next period? Are you just trying to evaluate previous month's data or something like that? It just kind of depends on what you're doing, but it really all stems from how confident you can be in that data versus how relevant that data is to a period that you're going into, which is kind of what you were talking about. When you're looking at more recent data, it's more relevant. It may not be fully settled, but it would inform the optimizations. We can kind of expect similar performance in the next week if nothing changes. And there's that. So, I think 14 days is generally like the attribution window where everything really settles and you can be like fully confident in it. But in general, I think you get 90%, 95% of the results that you're going to get within the first 2-3 days of attribution. So, I mean, as long as you're waiting at least a little bit for that data to settle, I think you can be pretty, you can rely on those metrics a little bit. Yeah, you may have some stuff that attributes a little bit later, but like, you know, maybe that's, depending on the size of the account, I guess it can vary, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you actually just answered my question, because when you download the report, it shows sales, and then I believe they have 7-day sales and 14-day sales. So yep. Where it really settles down and doesn't change anymore is the 14-day sales. So
well, that varies. That varies on what ad type you're looking at too, or where you're looking at it, right? Are you pulling it in a report, or are you looking at it in the console? Because the console is 7 days, but the reports are 14. And so you may have, or you're looking at the API, maybe it's a little bit different. So it depends on where you're looking at. It depends on where you're looking, what attribution window you're going to be working with. So yeah, understanding what those are, especially for different ad types too, I think kind of vary as well. Like sponsored brands, I think is 14, where sponsored products is 7. I don't know that for a fact, don't quote me, but yeah, something like that. So yeah.
So Andrew, let's talk a little bit about the changing the structure, if you wanna. So you mentioned aggregation versus segregation, and then let's imagine that somebody set it up and they're not able to put their finger on what they need to do. They want to make changes. Can they just go in and make the changes as they please? Or what is the right way to do this?
Yeah. I hesitate to want to go too black and white with most things in Amazon, but I'll give you this for a restructure. I would say that in most cases, in some cases, you can come into an account and you already have a structure that exists, right? You already have a structure that exists. So you as a manager or you as the brand owner should be able to go and work within that structure and build out different things that you're missing maybe within that structure or clean up certain things to help fit a certain structure. So it's not necessarily that you, if you're not doing this one thing, that you have to completely rehaul every single campaign and revamp everything. You can go through and make, you know, small tweaks within the existing structure that could make an impact as well. So it's not that you just have to overhaul everything and follow exactly what I'm going to tell you, the exact structure I'm going to tell you, but because you may have some of these campaigns already set up. So it's really just coming in and getting an evaluation, getting an audit of like, okay, here's what we have represented. Here's the tactics we're deploying against. Here's kind of the general structure that we have set up for X, Y, and Z products. And then from there, we can kind of fill in the gaps or depending on how bad it is, if we do actually need to do an overhaul, restructure for these campaigns, then generally what we'll do is, we'll use the data from those old campaigns in terms of like, what are our bids? What are average CPCs? What are our conversion rates across different things? And, we'll use that to, in that initial setup of the new campaigns. So we'll launch those new ones and, slowly we'll just transition and start to see our new campaigns start to win the visibility, win the impressions, win the clicks and sales. And we're not necessarily shutting off everything once we relaunch. It's a phased approach where we set those campaigns up. The ad spend was over here on these campaigns for quite some time. And so it may take a little bit of time to kind of get that the ball passed over to our new campaigns and have those campaigns and those ads start winning the placements that your old ones were. And so you don't want to just go like, cut the wire on your old ones and then launch your new ones. You kind of want to phase the old ones out with, you know, the appropriate management and budget allocations across the two. You can kind of slowly phase the new ones in. But I promised everybody before we hopped on here, and I know we're coming up on our time here. I promised everyone that I would give them my initial starting point for any product. And this is kind of generic and, there's some nuance to this, but this is kind of the core structure that I will generally start with and I'll kind of explain it. So if let's say I have one product, I'm going to first set up an auto campaign. Maybe not like first, but it really depends on where you are. I hate saying that because I may not set up an auto campaign if we don't have like really limited budgets or something like that. But generally speaking, I want an auto campaign running all the time. So that way I'm constantly showing up on new searches, those billions of new searches that are happening on Amazon every single day. I'm actually able to capture those because that auto campaign is constantly finding new searches and queries for me to show up on. So that's super important. Number two, I'll launch a manual research campaign. So these are going to represent my, let's just keep it in one tactic. Let's say non-brand. These are my non-brand keywords. These are going to be leveraging either broad or phrase match. So I personally like to segment out my match types to where I can see and see how much of my spend is going to each of these different match types. So that way, in certain scenarios, I can pull different levers. So let's say I'm in more of a research phase for this product. I don't necessarily know everything that converts really well for this product. I haven't identified a lot of my top terms and core keywords or things like that. And I'm trying to find more. Maybe I'm pushing more budget to my broad and my phrase campaigns to help identify and harvest into my exact. So there's different phases that you could be in where you may need to push broad or push phrase a little bit more to expand your reach, expand visibility, and ultimately find more keywords and more targets to convert on. So there's times where you need to allocate budget specifically towards those broader match types. And so I like to have those broken out. It makes it nice and clean and clear and gives me those levers that I can pull to support different times of year, different phases of a business. And so after that, I'll have my manual performance campaign. And so this is going to be my non-brand exact match targets. So these are going to be keywords that are tried and true. These are my go-to terms, the ones that drive conversion, that drive sales, that I know work for my product and are highly relevant. These are geared and they're set up to have precise control over that specific keyword to product relationship. So I can bid accordingly. And I know that those ads aren't going to be showing up on a bunch of variations of the keyword like they would on a broad or a phrase match. Like if you increase the bid on a broader phrase match, you're now opening yourself up to a much wider array of search queries that you weren't necessarily competing for before. If you're just using exact, you know what you're bidding on for which product. And so I'll have that segmented out. And then from there, we have kind of the same thing, but with product targeting. So product targeting within sponsored products now has expanded product targeting, and they have exact match product targeting. So within expanded product targeting, this is relatively new. This is more like your broad match for product targeting. And so these, I'll have that set up in one campaign, and then I'll have a performance version of my product targeting campaign. And so I have that structure to where at any point I can allocate dollars to more research efforts versus more driving performance efforts. I can balance the budgets across those different goals and those different tactics. But that structure right there, one auto campaign, two manual keyword campaigns, one broad, one exact, and then two product targeting campaigns, expanded, and one exact product targeting campaign. That's kind of like my core starting point. Okay. So that's like where I start. Depending on the complexity that we need to get into, from there, I can branch off and do a whole bunch of other things. Within my performance, I may break out those campaigns into multiple different campaigns that contain specific keywords grouped based on search volume or something like that. Or maybe I know that these are my top five core keywords that are driving like 99% of my sales and my results. So maybe I want to break those out into their own single keyword performance exact match campaigns and operate on their own. But at its essence, at its core, it's what I just shared, those five campaigns. And then from there, I can branch it out and get more segmented as I need to. But then I still also have that algorithmic benefit, that more aggregated, broader view, or where I'm doing more research and showing up on longer tail, winning some of those one-off sales and things like that. So that's my personal, I call it the campaign stack. It's what I start with. And there's a lot more to it than just that too, especially when you get into sponsored brands and sponsor display and all that type of stuff, brand targeting, all that. There's a whole multitude of campaigns that you could set up for any one individual ASIN. You could have a really robust structure, really robust campaign build out for any one product. And, but yeah, that's kind of the essence, the core of where I start. And then from there, I can branch it out.
Well, that's great, Andrew. So really, all our discussion is really best to title, so to speak, is for structuring sponsored product campaigns, right? We have to bring you back to cover the others because it's a whole discussion. And before we wrap up, quickly tell us how you would treat the branded keywords. Branded terms.
This one's a little bit easier, I think, for most people, unless you have like a really established brand. I kind of deploy a similar idea around just with branded keywords. Like I'll have like a broad brand and then like an exact brand for a particular product, and then have, you know, multiple of those and things like that. So yeah, you can kind of deploy a very similar structure if you want to. For your brand campaigns, but generally I would say you don't necessarily need that auto campaign for your branded keywords because, you know, that's not necessary, but your broad and everything like that will cover most of your queries that you're trying to get into. So yeah, I'll still add it and layer that in.
Separate campaign for sure though, right? Separate campaign for brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on the level of control that you need and the budgetary controls that you need, it could even just be one campaign with multiple ad groups in it for individual, your different branded products. It could be as simple as that. Like I've certainly done that in the past.
Great. Thank you, Andrew. This is where usually I'm getting to know you personally, but we're not going to do that now because we'll bring you back. And then we
all
get
right.
This was great information. So tell us, Andrew, how can people reach you? Share your contact information with us.
Yeah, totally. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. But what I'm most excited about right now is the software solution that you were kind of talking about in the beginning of the episode, AdLabs. My co-founder, Steven Nock, and I created this platform because we didn't feel like there was a solution out there in the market that could optimally manage bids that would suit a both automation and a manual approach. So we have this kind of blend of a semi-automatic bidding solution. It's probably, I don't want to be too cocky or anything, but I think it's the best sponsor products bidding algorithm on the planet. So that's what I'm most excited about right now. We're really building that out and growing that. So if you're interested in that, you can go to adlabs.app. And then in the wait list, you can submit a form and there'll be a toggle. So when it says, where did you hear from us? You just put Amazon Legends podcast, and we'll get you a free month of the solution. So you can kind of check out the tool, just see what it's all about.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you, Andrew. This is great. We'll have you back for sure. And I want to know more about the rest of the campaigns and great information. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before you go, make sure to sign up with Aarti and claim your lost revenue. Visit www.getaarti.com/legends to register. You will get 1 month free and experience Aarti's features. Sign up now at www.getaarti.com/legends. Thank you. And this brings us to the end of another episode. And I'll see you in the next.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.